When we met with National Treasury, we also wanted to understand, Chair, why would money earmarked for personnel be taken back? But National Treasury said, if the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Higher Education, they need to meet and see if they can deal with the exemptions that are allowed in any policy. And now we have written to the Higher Education Minister to say, please take up this matter with the Minister of Finance and see if you can win when dealing with the exemptions. But the other critical point is that this money stays with the department until the end of the academic year. So you have lectures without lecturers. Then, Chair, you ask the question, do we have savings? Of course, yes, we used to have savings. And those savings are mainly depreciation that is cash-backed. So that if something breaks, the college council will quickly take a decision and replace, so that the college will still be functional. But now that has been depleted in many colleges, because you cannot be focusing on equipment when you have no lecturers. And therefore, college council has to take that decision from the fact that you have 63% threshold. If a college is below that, then it means the college must appoint up to that threshold. But even that process, you need to apply and be approved, even though everybody knows you are below the threshold by so many percentages, and that translates so much money. Instead of that money being given to a college ring-fenced to say, this is what you can do with this money, appoint, but don't exceed, that is not the case. So even if Mr. Patel is saying that money will go to colleges, we had already incurred costs because we couldn't afford the situation where the full academic year goes without lecturers. It would come at the end of the financial year anyway. And we are kind of hard to say, but what do you say management must do? If, as college counselors, we really do not have any money, what do we do? So the question of savings is when you have your depreciation cash back so that you are able to deal with critical areas in the college. For example, remember there is no infrastructure development grant. So all you do, you squeeze within what is not sufficient. And then you say, let's put this so that when the principal tells us, I don't have, for argument's sake, a computer, for a computer class, we don't have to wait 6 months for all the applications. We then say, okay, let's take this from these reserves, which is cash-back depreciation in the main, and buy these computers for students to talk. So that particular capacity has been depleted by the department by the fact that you have to, colleges must have money up front and the department pays later. We are public institutions, of course. There is no way where we have money. Where you go to other programs, the other problem is that you are overutilizing the very assets you have if you take more students. And the lifespan of the assets of a college becomes shorter. And that is not commensurate with funding. So I wanted to check to clarify whether we have savings. Of course, some colleges would have, but the majority of colleges no longer have. Very few colleges. The issue, Chair, that you also raised was the issue of the full-time equivalent. I said that for economic and management sciences, the ratio the department uses is 2:1. Two students equal to one student at the level of funding. So you can immediately see where the underfunding comes from. For engineering students, 3:1. 3:1, so for every three students, you get one funding for a full student. So we must then carry the two from nowhere as a college, because they say per year you are doing 12 subjects and therefore they are dividing that by four. So that is why you come to 3:1. For economic and management sciences, you do four subjects and the total of subjects per year is eight. Therefore, that is where 2:1 is coming from. Only NCV first year. That's precisely the point we're making. That's precisely the point we're making. For NCV first year only, you get 1:1. If that student fails, for an example, 4 subjects, you then have to combine the students to go to a number of 7 subjects. And therefore, we're saying that punishes colleges and eventually punishes communities. So this is an inherent thing. That's why we are saying this full-time equivalence concept should not be used in our colleges. So you can then see if a student who's doing NCV, as they're failing, then you must have a combination at least up to 3 or 4 students making 1 student. The staff ratios or the staff that you have teach 1 individual student and not a combination. So that is why you see us crying foul about staffing. At a funding level, it's a combination. At a lecture hall, it's warm bodies with certain minimum. And how are we expected then to deal with that particular issue? So when it comes to full-time equivalent, that is what we were trying to say, that it is important that we deal with that particular issue. The proposal, this is the last step I'm going to make, and colleagues are going to come. The proposal that we have made to the Fees Commission. Chair, we have not had a meeting where the department says to us, let's discuss these issues except in the Fees Commission. I think we have made proposals. One of the proposals we made is that, look, the skills levy fund or NSF is there for skills. We are charged with the mandate of producing skills. So give us 65%. So that we are able to produce skills for young people. And the remainder then goes to those who are in industry, in various sectors. So we have made that proposal to say, there is money there. And in these documents, there are billions that are there. 2, we have said to the commission, look, you have unclaimed pension benefits that amount to 42 billion. To deal with the intermediate problem, if the state was going to borrow and guarantee at a lesser interest rate than in the open market, it would help us to stabilize the sector. But also we've gone through a very unpopular proposal that can we introduce a tax levy for education if it comes to a push, because we have no alternative. Young South Africans must be taught. So because private sector is not funding. Whites would want them to come in, but they are not funding at the level that it is going to make any material difference. So we are continuously saying,
let me just interject. We need those responses because they are going to assist us. We really do, but we've got time constraints.
The other colleagues are going to
answer. I would implore that they give their responses so that we give an opportunity to yet another agency to give us a presentation.
Thank you, Chief. Chair, the FTE issue, it took a long time for me as a counselor to understand. But if I can refer you to page 5 of our presentation, try and explain it in layman terms. You would see, let's just look at 2017, 2018, and you look at the conversion to FTEs, and you look NCV plus report 191, there are 422 students that are supposed to be funded. But when you go further down and you look, you will see number of funded FTEs will be 246. Number of unfunded is 170 and 175. That now demonstrates the impact of what the chair was trying to explain here because of this funding formula. So I just wanted to touch on that, that there is an example of how it works here. Then there's a question that came, who appoints councils. We are appointed by the minister as prescribed by the CET Act. And yes, we have interactions with the minister, but one of the things that has appeared and like is very coming out very loudly from council members is that councils are not enjoying much support on the challenges they are facing from the colleges, from the minister. To an extent that some councils will say, please go and ask why were we appointed? Are we not the arm of the minister to ensure that there is good governance and stability in these institutions? But we are working on that. Then the issue of the transfer of the colleges from the provincial competency to the national competency. Yes, when the universities were merged, that was funded for, precisely because universities were well established even by then. They had systems, but now you have the so-called glorified high school that are being transferred, and you've got principals that are now being are already in the employ of the department that are supposed to say, no, you are not transferring unless you fund it. And at that time, during the time of transfer, most councils were either not set up or colleges were under administration. So those are people which are us who are not employed by the department that can be able to put our foot down and say, you are not doing it. And it is for this reason that this organization is taking this baseline funding issue, which existed when we were in the complement of the province, and we moved along with it, and we are saying the status cannot hold. Colleges are collapsing. Communities are asking, why are you shutting down some programs? Why are colleges, our kids saying they do not have lecturers? And what do you do as a chairperson? How do you answer that? So it is for that reason that we are coming here and we are saying, yes, we have engaged the department and we will continue engaging and we've got a relationship, but it is not at the currently the relationship that is yielding much of the immediately desired results. I will let my colleagues to deal with the other issues.
I think, Chair, what we are requesting,
is that for which legislations needed to be changed. I think in our submission, we are requesting that we are be given an opportunity to do that particular submission. But in particular, the CET Act, that is the legislation that we want it to be changed, because that is the one that hinders governors to govern. That is the one that empowers the minister to appoint the principal's management staff. And that is the one that disempower councils not to take any disciplinary steps against those particular employees, because those employees belong to DHET. The same legislation, that is the one that empowers actually the minister to co-govern with us at the same time and micromanage with the management at that particular institution, because those people who are there are employed by the minister. When you have there's anything that you must take disciplinary steps, it's only the minister through DHET that can take those particular disciplinary steps. When the college perform poorly, you can't even held management, even the principal, to account, because the principal have signed the performance agreement with the DG. And therefore, it's only the DG who can be able to say to the principal, you are performing or not performing. So who will be sitting with this poor results, poor performance of colleges, and because you can't hold anyone accountable at the end. So we are saying, at the time of the promulgation of the legislation, similarly, the status quo was requiring this particular intervention, but now it is no longer relevant to the current circumstances in any way. And I'm saying we will also agree with you, and I still remember you are the one who raised this issue of Indaba in that budget discussion with the minister. That's why we want that it to happen. But we also say, Minister, whilst we are honorable co-chair and chair, whilst we agree that we will not have to contest with the university, but the reality that we are facing is that if you want really TVET to play a machinery role for artisan development, Parliament is the one that has power, must exercise that power, and must ensure that we have capacity that will assist colleges, like what they are doing with colleges. On the 21st of April, the minister in the media release, he was actually talking about 7 million, 7 billion for infrastructure. But when you look from the first paragraph up until the last, it was all about how the universities are going to benefit. So what we are saying, we are not contesting, but we are saying the manner that DHET and the ministry managed to get money to ensure that they sustain this capacity, like lecturer development programs, management and leadership, and also issues of infrastructure, grants, through grants, the very same system, it can minimize the risk of this volcano destruction that we are talking about, because no one in colleges is willing to wait any longer about what is currently happening. I think councils, management, students are saying, now you are useless councils. Why are you there? Because you can't even ensure that we are effective in terms of funding and all other resources. Colleges are buying books for students in TVET colleges. That comes from our own operational budget in a way. So the same issues, that savings that we're talking about, are exhausted now. We can't even do it for the next coming year. So that is why we're saying, Chair, our participation lastly to center this student-centered model, saying that we agree that this model should be piloted. But if you pilot one college, what's the sense there? What's the logic? What do you want to achieve? So the impact, it will not be much. So if you pilot more, then at least we'll have to say colleges agree or disagree with the model. But if you do one, you tell us that universities are still better than colleges. That's what you want to secure about this particular student center. So centered model. We are saying in the review of the pilot outcomes, the TVET CGC must participate there in reviewing that the outcomes of that pilot, because otherwise will not make any necessary and meaningful impact that we want this model to do to TVET and all other community colleges and universities in a way. Thank you.
What's the final comment? Okay. Oh, okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My colleagues have said it mouthfully. All what we are saying to you is that if there's a Chinese idiom that says if you want to destroy a mountain, you must start removing the small stones. The Indaba, which you proposed earlier on, I should think it is a step of removing the small stone, and so that we destroy the mountain. The mountain is there. It is there. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. We really welcome the responses by both yourselves and the department. You and the department and other stakeholders belong to one family, which is DHET. which is why I suggest that we have to create a platform where we come together to deliberate further on this issue. We can't exhaust issues that affect TVET colleges in 1 hour, allocated in an afternoon. They've taken note of your concerns and your challenges. We also, as Parliament, have taken note of your concerns and challenges, and we are going to use the power that we have to ensure that we support this sector with a view to ensuring that we deliver to the mandate. You have promised people out there, and we must deliver. That would be my concluding remark, that you can't exhaust issues here and now, but it was good that we had you. And it was good that we got a sense of the responses of the department. Although in certain issues you could actually see some kind of frowning as an indication that is it so or is it true and so on. But let us come together and resolve this issue once and for all. And I think the minister and the department are going to oblige, because we are all very, very concerned about the state of affairs of the TVET colleges in the country. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think you've concluded on this matter. I only want to say that the 2:1 must be clarified by the department also, so that we have the entire picture of what this is, on what they are saying, and how the department is also, because it will then help us to look comprehensively at what this is. But that's my only response, Chair. I think you have adequately covered that.
What is the department's response now? Oh, okay. At some stage. In subsequent engagements, some of the issues will be clarified, because we engage with the department quite frequently. No, thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. Maybe it would assist you to listen to Neswas as well. If you're playing... Is it hot for you or for us? Remember, there is some cake and tea outside. Just 5 minutes, let's rest. You can go to the loo and come back and continue. Yeah, everybody was.
We found she didn't apply.
She didn't apply.
There's an email that she sent.
Thank you. Ach nee, die Reihe hier, das ist in Münster. Ich hätte dann noch direkt auf die Trink. Ich hätte ein Maßrad. Eben der Wahlstraße gestanden. Von die Stadt zu kommen. Und dann hat er hier so ein Stadt auf die Straße. Die ist auch die Wörter von euren Stadt. Ja, ja, ja. 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 Ja, ja, ja.
I'm going to phone you back. Okay? Give me a while. All right.
Hey,
good afternoon once again, honorable members. I think we've had a relaxing leg stretch. We've taken our tea now. Let us continue to the last round of engagement. Let me hand over to Nesfah straight away without any wait. Please do introduce yourself. You are also allocated 45 minutes for presentation and thereafter will engage. But if you can make it shorter than that, will be happy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Co-Chairs. By way of introduction, I'm Sizwe Masana. I am the chairperson of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. With me here is one of our board members, Bongima Singha, who's at the back there, as well as the acting executive officer, Lerato Nahe, who's sitting up front. Yeah, I know there's a big pillar in the middle of the room, so you can't see him, but he's sitting over here. And some of our colleagues and executives from the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. We will try and go through the presentation. We know, of course, that the National Student Financial Aid Scheme is quite topical, and especially at this point in time, and therefore we don't want to rob the committee, the two committees, the chance of engaging. So perhaps we will try and go through the presentation as quickly as possible so that we can go through the questions and answers. I will go through the presentation, and the acting EO is going to help me drive from where he is sitting. And just by way of background, obviously this year has been quite a significant year because this is when we implemented fully across all universities and TVET colleges the student-centered model. Up to last year, we were only running a pilot at a handful of institutions. This year we decided after the transformation summit that was hosted by the minister, which requested that we accelerate the rollout of the student-centered model to then roll it out fully across institutions this year. And I must say, obviously, this decision to roll out fully happened at a time when, we have the hashtag fees must fall, we have protests, where the temperature across the higher education sector is elevated, and with the migration to any new system, there are always going to be issues and problems. But what we did as NSFAS was to start last year, in the middle of last year in June, to engage with stakeholders in terms of making sure that we were briefing people, were training institutions, that they knew what was to be expected of them, and how the system was going to impact on the whole student enrollment process at both universities and TVET colleges. If you see the dates, we started on the 14th of June, and we increased that engagement towards the end of the year because the application cycle increases in terms of volumes, in terms of the processes, but also in terms of the fact that you get results. And last year and this year, the whole examination process was also not a smooth one. So the assumptions that we had when we started changed quite significantly because of the fact that the whole system was going through a lot of changes, a lot of disruptions and so on. So if you look over the page, we continued with the engagement for both institutions, in other words, the universities and TVET colleges, across all the key stakeholders, in other words, the vice chancellors, the registrars, the SRCs, the financial aid officers, and part of that engagement included the training of those officials, especially the bursary officers, so that they knew what was coming down the line. The stakeholder management process is now, especially given our preparation for the 2018 registration process, we've increased and elevated that, especially given some of the challenges which were faced, especially by the rural institutions. In other words, the TVET colleges that are spread out in rural areas as well as the universities obviously do not have the same level of capacity and sophistication that the urban-based institutions have. So we have, elevated and increased the plan in terms of how we're going to work with those institutions as well as with the department in resolving some of the challenges that we faced going forward. If you just look at the allocations, you know, the allocations for 2017 year were increased, especially given some of the challenges that were experienced from 2015 already. So if you look at the total amount that the department allocated for student financial aid, that amount was 11.23 billion rand for this, you know, the, obviously this is in terms of the fiscal year, so it would work in terms of, you know, the academic year for certain respects, but you have unspent funding that came from last year that was rolled forward of 645 million rand. And in January this year, on the 17th of January, as well as on the 21st of April, we had already paid two institutions a total of 3.6 billion rand to allow institutions to pay students, especially covering tuition and the allowances which are paid to students. And this is particularly important because, you know, very often, yes, we've had some issues regarding, for instance, the SBACS vouchers and so on, but the fact of the matter is that institutions have been sitting with a significant amount of money which they are able to allocate to students to allow students to not just register, but to attend lectures, to pay for accommodation, books, food, and so on. You know, this was also part of just ameliorating the challenges that are faced in the system. If you look at the breakdown of how we have funded students this year, and it's really pleasing, and I guess, you know, it's a story that we as the NESFAs need to tell a little bit more. In the academic year of 2016, we funded some 405,000 students. This year, in 2017, we have funded a total of 463,470 students. So this is quite a significant increase over the number of students that were funded last year. So if you look at this, it's actually, you know, an increase for 405,000 to 463,000. And I mean, you can do a calculation yourself. It's certainly, you know, closer to the mid-teens in terms of the number of students that have been funded. I think this really goes to the credit of this institution, Parliament, in terms of having voted an additional budget for funding students, but also the department in terms of having anticipated that given the demands by students for funding and so on, there was going to be a need for more students to be funded. Now, if you look at that number, obviously, the, how much is paid out to students and finally allocated, we go through the whole process, which culminates in students having to sign what we call loan agreement forms or schedule of particulars or SOPs. And you will see the bar graphs that are sitting at the bottom of the slide, which is in front of you, that as far as the TVET colleges are concerned, because a lot of TVET colleges would have received the amount for allowances already, what we've experienced is that, you know, students have been very slow in signing the schedule of particulars. Part of it has to do with the results issue in the TVET system, but part of it is because once students receive allowances, the incentive for them to sign SOPs or SOPs is reduced because they say, well, especially in the current climate, they say, well, I've now got the money to do X, Y, Z, and therefore, why do I need to still go and sign this SOP? So we've created, you know, a whole setup, including course centers that are dedicated and working with the TVET colleges and universities in making sure that these documents, these loan agreement forms or schedule of particulars, SOPs, assigned. So even though, you know, we generate these, obviously we do depend on universities and TVET colleges to help us sign these laptops. So, you know, we're working on that process now to make sure that, you know, obviously from our systems and our record standpoint, we are up to date. The next slide, if you look at the payments to universities and TVET colleges, and just, you know, the breakdown in terms of how much was allocated, how much was given as upfront payment, how much was actually paid to in terms of the generation of laptops, you will see this goes back to the 3.6 billion rand that I talked about in the earlier slide, that the total allocation is 11.767 billion rand. We made the upfront payment on the 17th of January of 1.764 billion. And you can see the split between the DHAT, National Skills Fund allocation, which goes to universities, which is 1.395 billion, and the 369 million, which went to TVET colleges. We've got the breakdown later that you'll see in terms of how much was allocated to each TVET college or to each university. And the actual payment, obviously, because there's a process of generating these LAFSOPs, as I indicated, that process is rather slow, but we had already paid about 392 million rand to the universities in terms of the actual LAFSOPs that were generated. And that we made another payment on the 21st of April of 1.479 billion, which is 1.1 billion paid to universities and 369 million paid to TVET colleges. So the total amount paid to date is that 3.635 billion rand. That's on slide 9. Now, the next slide just shows the breakdown, and I won't really, in the interest of time, sort of go into the detail here. You can look at these at your own leisure, but it just indicates, you know, how much was allocated to each institution. Part of the problem, especially at TVET colleges here, is that sometimes the allowances, the upfront payments that we make to institutions do not find their way to the students themselves. And we had this complaint raised by students, which is quite interesting that in a number, especially of TVET colleges, the students, when we meet with the SRCs, they've asked us to accelerate the rollout of the SBAX voucher system because I guess there's a trust issue that even though we share this information with the college principals as well as with the SRCs, there's always an issue that, you know, sometimes there's a delay in getting these allowances across to students. So I will skip a lot of those slides that just go into the detail of how much went to which TVET colleges. In terms of, you know, the process, you know, clearly when you introduce a new system such as a student-centered model, there were a number of things that we could have anticipated better, we could have planned better for. As an example, just out of the applications that we received close to 400,000 applications for new students, from new students. That's not the returning students. Out of those, to be exact, there were 388,000 applications that we received. About 22% of those were manual applications. That number was a lot higher than the number that we anticipated we were going to receive in terms of manual applications. Now, maybe when the student standard model system itself was designed, it's a really good system, but it's good in an environment where you assume that a lot of students will have access to the internet, will be able to apply, will be able to upload their facilities and have the ability to do all of that. The reality of the situation is that obviously our country still has large parts that do not have access to the internet, especially given the type of students that we deal with. So we had to put some measures in place to deal with some of those, especially the manual applications. And the manual application process can be quite complicated because, you know, we partnered with the Department of Basic Education, with the National Youth Development Agency, with the Post Office to assist students that did not have access to the internet. The problem with that, though, is that the collation of all those applications which would have been delivered to schools, to post offices, and so on, creates particular challenges in terms of just making sure that there's completeness in receiving all of those applications at NSFOS, because some of them get lost somewhere in the mail. So you have a number of cases where students would say, I actually submitted my application, and NSFOS never responded to me. In a lot of those cases, it's because, you know, some of those applications may have gone missing in the mail and so on. So we're putting measures in place to make sure that we can mitigate that risk by, for example, maybe going back in terms of where students may apply to students applying at institutions, in other words, at TVET colleges and universities, because at least they are accustomed to how we work and how we manage the collation, the transmission, the delivery of those application forms. And part of the other problem, just going back to the next slide, is that the institutions themselves do not have the same level of sophistication of using IT systems. You find that when it comes to particularly rural-based institutions, we have a category of institutions that, yes, have IT systems that are automated, but the level of integration with our own systems leaves a lot to be desired. So, for instance, just in terms of receiving registration data, so we've only received about 64% of registration data from universities, so there's still an outstanding 36% that we are working with those institutions to get the registration data. What does this mean? It means we need to know that each of the students that we have approved for funding has been offered and has been registered at that institution, and it's quite important. And for the TVET colleges, because of the issues with results in TVET colleges and so on, we've only confirmed about 13% of that data. So there's still a lot of work that we are working with both the department in terms of the results as well as the TVET colleges. In fact, we're working with CETA as well to try and get the files directly from CETA so that we can reconcile all of the numbers, because you know this is quite important to make sure that we don't end up with ghost students that were funded that are actually not registered, or some students may have cancelled their registration and so on. So this does affect the disbursement, because you know obviously for TVET colleges we've found a way to work with the institutions to deal with this, but for universities it does mean that there may be gaps where students have not finally received their confirmation because the institutions themselves have not sent all of the documentation and information that we require. And this is quite important because it affects how we generate the LAFSOPs, you know, in terms of, you know, making sure that those individual students can be funded. We've undertaken a lot of training with institutions to make sure that, you know, they understand the importance of this, that we can deal with the challenges. And obviously, I mean, on our side, the board is, just to give you a sense, I mean, in January and February alone, the board EXCO was meeting every week. We created a war room to make sure that we were following up on all of the issues and challenges that were being experienced internally, especially when it comes to the capacity constraints, the ICT systems, the call center problems, and so on. And I mean, we've addressed a lot of those problems. So I'm sure, you know, honorable members would have received complaints from students and so on. But I'm sitting here, you know, really confident that next year, when we come to the 2018 cycle, we will have dealt with most of the problems that we experienced, especially because of our own system deficiencies. Obviously, it's quite difficult for us to solve the institution's problems, in other words, the problems that sit at universities or TVET colleges, even though we try and build capacity and work with the institutions to ameliorate or mitigate the challenges that we face. For instance, you know, if you just look at the technical challenges which emanate from the institutions, you find that, you know, they give us codes of the courses or the subjects which are being done, which are not matched or do not reconcile. You find that there are institutions that have delays in preparing the data that we require. You find that institutions that use the Adapt IT, for instance, have not implemented the systems properly on their side. So sometimes we depend on third parties who are system suppliers to help institutions to make sure that they are dealing with the issues appropriately. And on our side, what we've done, you know, we use for our data management system a system called CODIS. So we've deployed that at institutions to make sure that the institutions understand, and we work with them to resolve all of the issues, including the training of them. We have the targeted media campaign communication forum, which works with the universities and TVETs to just make sure that people understand where the issues are and that we can communicate with the students, with the institutions themselves. I've spoken about the 15% upfront payment that was made in January as well as on the 21st. So in total, we've actually paid about 30%. And we've set up a dedicated contact center which is conducting students and following up in terms of the signing of the LAFSOPs with the students. If you look at the amount that's been allocated and how it's spread across the provinces, because I know honorable members would be interested because of your constituencies in terms of where the money has gone to, and this is based on the full-time equivalent of the students, in other words, where the students come from using the F2E as a definition, you'll see based on the percentages here. So KwaZulu-Natal 20%, Eastern Cape 12%, Western Cape 14, 3% in Northern Cape, and so on. And in terms of universities, so if you break that down into universities, you can see the split that's gone to universities there. And we have a number of, the next slide, of unfunded students who qualify for NSFAS, but because we have a finite amount of money, these students have not been funded. And this is also, a cause of some heightened temperature in some of the students, because obviously, having allocated the money fully that we have, it is important to address. And the agreement with the department was that the department will see if they can find additional funding once we have gone through to make sure that there's no unutilized funding which is sitting somewhere in the institution. So there's a total amount of 1.8 billion rand, which is in respect of 42,440 students that do qualify for NSFAS, and can see the breakdown by institution as well as those that qualify because they are, SASA-dependent households or come from quintile 1, 2, and 3. We have a total of those 42,440 students in a total amount of 1.8 billion rand that are qualifying students that we need to still take care of. So if you add this to that number of 464,000 students, we will actually, and assuming that the department can find the money to deal with the students, it does mean that we will be above 500,000 students that have been funded this year. So, if you compare that to 405,000 last year, we will have an increase the number of students that are receiving funding from the National Student Financial Aid Scheme from 405,000 to over 500,000, which is almost a 25% increase in the number of students that are funded. So it's quite a significant increase. And I think, and there have been a lot of issues around the student-centered model, and this is one of the benefits of the student-centered model, that, obviously with government and parliament's determination to increase the budget that's allocated, but we can now, instead of top-slicing students, which used to happen in the past, and all the other issues which used to happen with the previous system, we can now identify by student which student we have funded and what that student is studying and so on. Now, the board, obviously, having been concerned with some of the internal NSFAS issues, as I indicated, we've had a number of meetings in January alone. We're meeting almost every week. We set up a whole process and system to identify the issues, you resolve them so that they were resolved by management, and also just play our oversight role. You will be aware that, we made leadership changes, so that's why we have the acting executive officer. We're in the process of finalizing the appointment of the permanent CEO as we speak. There are people and capacity constraints, so we're going through the process now of making sure that, there's improvement in project governance, especially because the skills that are required with the student-centered model are elevated skills compared to how NSFAS used to operate in the past. So we're going through that process now of making sure that we have the people who have the competencies and the skills, to do what is expected of us, and that there's consequence management. So we're going through that process now of performance management and so on. The operating model deficiencies, like for instance, the fact that the manual applications were not properly anticipated. We're putting a lot of systems to make sure that for the 2018 application cycle, we're dealing with those issues. The IT and systems constraints, we appointed people to come in and tell us and give us a detailed IT system review. And in fact, we at the next board meeting, which is on the 31st of May, will be doing a workshop with the key stakeholders, in other words, the institutions, given the solutions that we are implementing, to make sure that we get inputs as well from the universities and TVET colleges, whether or not the fixes that we are doing will address the issues which they may have raised. So there's been quite a significant amount of effort in making sure that we're resolving these things. the institutional weaknesses that some universities and Tibet colleges have indicated, especially the rural-based institutions. We are now working with those institutions to make sure that as we get into the 2018 cycle, we are going to be ready to train them, to build capacity, to work with them and identify where the deficiencies are so that we can mitigate all of these risks going forward. The poor data quality, I mean, one of the issues that we faced with trying to speed up the process is that we ended up with some inconsistencies in the quality of data that we were getting from the institutions, but also the quality of data that we were producing ourselves. So we've now put in place or putting and continuing to roll out a rigorous system of controls and data verification to make sure that, you know, we have one version of the truth, because we ended up with different versions of the truth as a board. It was really challenging at some point to understand and know which numbers we were dealing with. And the stakeholder engagement, you know, so we're designing a formal stakeholder engagement strategy, which we are going to workshop with the Tibet colleges and the universities on the 31st of May. And then subsequent to that, we have a whole series of meetings that are set up and workshops that are set up with institutions to make sure that we don't have the same kind of problems that we have faced, you know, previously. That concludes my presentation, Honorable Co-Chair.
No, thank you very much. We welcome your presentation. It's now time for members to engage. Honorable Bozoli, Honorable Professor, please, Honorable Kaula, Honorable Makuela, Honorable Mwoni, Anil Mwoni, or Honorable Kekana, please know who is the
it's obvious that you've gone for what you might call a big bang approach in introducing this new system, and you're saying we're going to get it right this year, and it doesn't matter how long it takes and how much detail we have to get involved in. And I understand that, and I appreciate it, because, in fact, NISFAS has been fussing around with a student-centered model for years now and has never taken the next step. So I admire you for your boldness in taking the next step and saying, we're going to do it this year. However, as with all new systems, you've clearly encountered quite substantial problems of data, of systems, of people, and in spite of having all this money. So I've got my questions all really arise out of that. You issued a statement yesterday saying 68,000 students are not signing their WAPs or WAPs. What are they called?
Loan agreement forms.
Loan agreement. I wondered whether that was symptomatic of you know, a broader failure in the system. We've had numerous complaints because, you know, one does, as an MP, you get people phoning you up and saying, I've got this problem. And honestly, we've had lots of complaints from students saying they haven't been given their money and they haven't been informed when they will be given their money. So they feel they've been left high and dry. We've had complaints about the call center not knowing what to say when they're phoned, or giving inconsistent information from one operator to another. And then I have some issues with your figures. Now, our figures on 2016, and they weren't audited, so I'm sure your figures are more accurate, but maybe you could provide clarity, because our figures for 2016 funding given by the Department of Higher Education were that 470,000 were funded in 2016. And you're saying, well, it was actually only 405,000. So that's just a little bit of a puzzle. Then, looking at your figures, you say so far you've given out 3.7 billion rand. So I presume that's the first 3 billion plus whatever's been given out since. But you have 11 billion rand. Now, what does that actually mean then? Why have you only given out 3.7 billion? And does it mean that there are students who've been told they've been given funding, but they haven't been actually given it? That would seem to be the implication of some of your tables, that there are lots of students who have been told, well, you're being funded, but they haven't been given the funding. I can't sympathize with you on your sudden realization that so many people don't have internet, because it's a sort of basic thing that everybody who works in higher education knows, that people in the rural areas do not have internet or don't have enough internet or can't use it often enough. And so I really am amazed that that sort of surprise on your part seems to come in. Then college data, only 13% of the college data on registration seems to be confirmed. Now that's extremely low. What's the timeline for that? And I'm getting towards the end now. 42,000 are unfunded, but the department did say to students there will be no students who are left without money. I seem to remember at one point there was that statement. So, and that's going to cost over a billion rand. So where is, one wonders where that money is going to come from. And that's maybe a more question to the university. And then is UNISA one of the universities that gets NSFAS funding? I mean, presumably not in terms of residence, but in terms of fees, because it doesn't seem to appear on your list of universities that's been given money, or maybe I missed it. So just some questions, and all arising from the Big Bang approach, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we must all be positive and say we understand and appreciate the vigor with which the board is tackling the whole issue of funding and trying by all means to revolutionize it and make it more accessible. I mean, I think we need to appreciate that. And because it's more technical, it's going to take time. And we need to also to say our people have not been exposed to IT, our students, lecturers, and whosoever has not been exposed to that. And it's going to take time. And of course, I remember, Chairperson, last year, newspapers, or in the previous term, newspapers or the media was touting that there were about 53,000 students who were supposed to be, who had applied but had been rejected. And I would love to know how far you know about that, or it was just a matter of thumb sucking, because we've got to deal with real issues here. And of course, again, you said in your statement that there are some funds that do not reach students. And I stand to be corrected, because in the whole presentation you also mentioned what challenges there are. But it's very concerning, Chairperson, if one were to hear that there are funds that do not reach students, whereas they're supposed to reach students. Now, the question that will arise, are these funds being mismanaged, misappropriated, or is it because of a deficiency with regard to skills at universities and TVET colleges that will enable students to access these funds? So that is the question that arises. Now, there's another question about that some of the data that you get from the third party. The third party has got to validate the data, then you depend on that data. And I want to ask, how far does that data assist you? And how authentic is it at that level? when you don't get it to the first-hand recipient of the funds that you have dispersed, and you get it to the, from the third party. So those are my questions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Co-Chairpersons, and Mr. Mwafane and your team. Thank you very much for the presentation. If my memory serves me well, one of the main objectives why you introduced this model, it was to deal with issues of benefiting the people who were fraudulently, trying to cut down on the people who are fraudulently benefiting from the system. I know it's still early days to tell whether we are getting there, but I would like to know from what has happened so far, has there been instances where students who may have been approved while the system was still decentralized have been disapproved now because of some reasons now that the system has been centralized, which will give us indications of whether there were those real issues of fraudulent action. And the second one, Chairperson, is we have just been to Mpumalanga, and we went to Mpumalanga University, and when we got there, students were not at the institution. They were at home because there was a protest and there was a shutdown of the institution. The rector reported that the shutdown was due to the reason for the protest was NSFAS. The funds that were due to students, deserving students, that had not been paid for 2016. I would like to know whether that has been resolved and why that delay until the institution get to that kind of dilemma for 2017, because the rector reported that the Vice Chancellor reported that it was not an issue that pertained to 2017. It was an issue that was pertaining to 2016. Why that long delay until the institution gets to that kind of dilemma? Thank you very much, Chair.
Coaches, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the presentation by the Chairperson of NSFAS Board. I must start by saying that NSFAS is doing a very good job under difficult circumstances. Inasmuch as there are some problems that are being identified on a day-to-day basis, but we need to appreciate the fact that there is work that is being done, and they are dealing with thousands of students. There will be bound to be some problems here and there. And we know for a fact that as these problems arise, they are doing their best to resolve them. And as they do so, of course, we want to thank them for that work. It would be naive to think that as they do their job, there will be no problem. There will be problems because sometimes students do not apply on time, and like they said, some do not even sign the agreement laws, which is a prerequisite, is a condition that students must also meet to make their work easier. But then I have got one or two questions to ask. Of the 42,440 unfunded students, are these new students? Or do this number include students that were funded in 2016 but not in 2017? The reason I'm asking this question is that sometimes we do get calls from those students that are saying, yes, NSFAS did get me some funding in 2016, but now I have none. And our understanding is that a student applies for it. And if the student passes the modules, then there is no reason for the student not to be funded for the following year. I need clarity on that. And, well, I would also end in this one so that you may follow up, because this is one of the students that did send some message to say, I was funded, but I'm not funded this time around. I'll give you this information. Maybe you could trace him and see what the problem is. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to start off by thanking NSFAS by the increase from 405,000 in 2016 to over 463,000 funding in 2017. Although we know that this is not enough, we know that there is a dire need out there for NSFAS. While noting that universities and colleges received upfront payment to meet student registration fees and allowances, the delays in communication of the financial eligibility to students meant that universities could not allocate the allowances if they did not have information of students who qualified. This is a reality we were confronted with in Univen when we had an oversight early this year in other TVET colleges. We heard that Univen had to travel from Limpopo to Cape Town in order to try to resolve challenges as there were threats of strike. So this is a bit disappointing, although we are happy that you have identified and acknowledge also the challenges. We do want you to act without a fear or favor in such cases where you find that there were administrative deficiencies. We know that you are able to do it, but I think we think that with NSFAS you need to put more pressure, especially with your personnel. Secondly, in the APP of the department, there is an indication of an amount of over 2 billion that it will be allocated to NSFAS in 2018-19 to cater for the 2016 unfunded students. How many students were affected, and whether the problem of unfunded students will continue over the medium term. Thank you, Chair.
The issue that I'm raising is concerning all students who qualify, who have done things properly. You see, at the University of Vanderkam and University of the North, the SRC said to us, look, in those instances where students need assistance, we in the SRC have availed ourselves that we help them apply electronically. Now, it looks like this is the route NSFAS. Remember that overseas, we are told, there are universities where you study online, you study electronically, a degree from course one up to the last year, and you get your degree and certificate. Not having attended class, not having just sitting at home, which if we can follow that system successfully, that will save a lot of money from infrastructure, from classes, from money you are supposed to spend on residences, and that money can be used direct into tuition. And that is a lot of money. So it looks like this electronic application is the route that we've got used to. But I was surprised that at Vanda, even though the SRC was availing itself, even at the University of the North, to assist those students that need assistant with this application online, it wasn't happening. Actually, at Vanda, you're saying 95% of students, they are still continuing the strike because they believe the 5% will never happen unless there's a tire burning at the gate. So I'm just saying we should be very careful, because if you give students the impression that unless there's fire somewhere, things won't be done, we're building a very bad culture for ourselves, because students will not look until we strike and burn tires, it won't happen. But I must congratulate you, because if you're going to do
500,000 students, at least it looks like there's light in the channel. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, and thanks, Anesfas, for the presentation. I just want to refer you to the oversight that we had in Waterberg College. We were told that they could not reach the target for 2017. Because NSFAS was slowly responding to send confirmation to students. I just want to check how many students are still waiting confirmation for status of financial eligibility, or have you already rejected those that are not qualifying and then you are finished with the issue? Number two, in the University of Venda, they informed us that some of the problems that caused this that caused the NSFAS not to respond earlier is because the IT experienced problems for 2 weeks. We just want to hear from you whether the information is correct that you stayed for 2 weeks with the IT having experiencing these problems. Thank you very much.
And another member wanting to raise a question?
Thank you, Chair. I've got one question, and that is, I do not hear in the report what support are you giving to the disabled students?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a couple of questions. One, the administration of NSFAS have moved to online applications, but because of the problems you experienced with the institutions, we had made arrangements with in terms of students in the rural areas accessing the form and returning the form. You have reverted to the use of institutions like universities and colleges. And you have said that there's been training or there is programmed training for personnel that is handling NSFAS. I just want to know if they are doing that as an added responsibility over and above the responsibilities they have for the respective institutions. Are they paid any amount extra for this added responsibility, or is it part and parcel of their day-to-day responsibilities in those institutions? And the accountability mechanism in case there are challenges. My next question is, your systems to verify or authenticate the information, the data that you receive, are they effective? Have we reached a stage where we can say that the fund is actually addressing the deserving cases? Of the 42,440, are those deserving cases or is it a mix of both non-deserving and deserving? Those would be my questions. Thank you. You can then begin to respond, Mr. Nassan, with your team.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Co-Chairs, and Honorable Members. Just starting with the announcement yesterday that, you know, the 68,000 students who haven't signed, is this a system failure or not? It actually is not a system failure. It is an issue which relates to maybe the unintended consequences of paying upfront allowances to institutions. It's also that the students, especially under the current climate, you know, they get the money, they go and pay for whatever they need to pay for, and they may not necessarily go and sign. We've set up a call center. Part of the reason, the second reason is because we send one-time PINs to students' cell phones. So they have to activate that agreement, you know, by putting that one-time PIN. You put it into, you know, an application, and that's how you actually sign. So it's a digital signature, just like you do when you transact with a bank. So that's how it works. The challenge, though, is that very often students may have 2, 3, 4 SIM card numbers, or they lose them. And that's why it's important to work with institutions to try and identify those students, to go and talk to them and ask them, working with institutions, to we have a workaround, a process where they can go and physically sign. If for whatever reason, maybe the cell phone is lost or the number's changed and so on. So a lot of these 68,000 are students that are there. It's not the system's failures or problems. It's simply because, you know, finding all of these 460,000 or so students is not such an easy, you know, process. But, you know, as we, one of the reasons, that's why we're running this public campaign, to say, please, your loan is going to lapse if you don't sign your loan agreement form. Various complaints that you know, come from students, and we certainly had a problem with our call center capacity. In January, our call center capacity was only able to handle about 150 concurrent calls. We then, as a board, approved the additional investment to the call center. So part of the problem was just the capacity system issues, in terms of, because the call center has to respond to the information that's already sitting in the system. So, and because we had to put some manual processes to upload all the applications so that we could communicate back to the institutions and the students, it did mean that it took some time to clear the backlog in the system, and therefore, you know, the call center, that's why we had a lot of complaints, you know, all of us, and I'm sure the honorable members had a lot of those complaints that, you know, they phone the call center, they can't get an answer. We have invested quite a lot in the systems, in the call center capacity, but also in the system constraints at the back end, and we continue to do so. That's why we have this workshop on the 31st of May, because we had asked IT experts to come and identify all of the component parts, you know, from infrastructure constraints, in other words, broadband or the processing power, to, you know, the connectivity or broadband issues on our side, to how we link with institutions, because it's quite a complex system, because it links with all of these different systems that either sit inside or sit outside of NESFA. So we've been particularly concerned as a board that, you know, it, there were a lot of issues at the beginning of the year. We're getting a much better sense of where the problems are, so that we can have short-term fixes, medium-term fixes, as well as long-term fixes. So that's the purpose of our board workshop on the 31st. But we've already covered quite a lot of solving or sorting out some of the problems that we had in January, February, and March. The 3.7 billion rand that's been given out versus the 11 billion rand, there's a little bit of a disconnect between the academic year and the fiscal year. So we get the money for the 2017 year in April only. So the payment that we've made of 3.7 billion rand, which was the January, the March payment, was obviously the department working with Treasury will have some money available so that we can deal with that. But the actual check for this academic year starts in the fiscal year that starts in April. So that's why, I mean, we can't spend money. The fact that 11 billion rand is approved for the academic year does not mean in January, February, March we have that money. We don't have it, because we only get that allocation transferred from April. But there would be money that, you know, the department will make us available so that we can assist the institutions exactly in this fashion. In other words, pay allowances and upfront payments and so on. So there's just that difference. That's why, you know, in certain cases, we get those transfers during the year, and we may only finalize the payment sometimes up to November, so that's when we got the money in terms of the fiscal year. So that's a difference there. I agree with you, Honorable Pozzoli, that we could have anticipated the manual applications better than we did. You know, it was certainly, you know, we had tested the system in terms of the capacity or how it could deal with, and our assumptions were incorrect. The assumptions, this was the first year, the assumptions how many manual applications we're going to get was completely underestimated. So, I mean, it's certainly a lesson going forward that we have to provide a lot more facilities and capacity for manual applications than what we did. The 13%, you know, TVET data, yes, it is very low, and I'm sure in the previous meetings there would have been discussion around the results, issues in TVET and so on. So we are working with the department and as well as with the TVET. We found a way, obviously, around it because that's why we paid allowances and working with the TVET to make sure that the reconciliation, we don't end up with COVID students that are funded. But it is an issue that, you know, obviously we're in the process of working with. That's why we're waiting, you know, having the department having sorted out the results issues probably in March or so, or April. The uploading of all the electronic files by CETA has taken a little bit longer, so we're waiting for those files from CETA having been verified through Omalusi and so on, the results having been verified, for us to get the proper file that we can then use to integrate. So it's a process that we're working with. We are obviously, as a board, very concerned about the low number as it is now. But, you know, the certainly the department is working with us. The 42,000 unfunded students, or the 42,440 students, you know, of course, you know, we hope the department is going to be able to fund the money because these are deserving students. So in the 42,000, for zero. These are qualifying students. They're not students that were declined. Students that were declined, you know, are not in this system. So they do include, of course, as you saw in my schedule, students that we may have declined and then went through an appeals process. And when they resubmitted information and they found that they qualify, so it does include those appeals that were subsequently, you know, approved. But it does not include declined students. And UNISA, we will, maybe you can just give us the numbers. But UNISA, yes, we give UNISA students, you know, funding for tuition, for books, in fact, we've increased the allocation to UNISA because UNISA used to co-fund the students with us. Previously, but because of the budget issues that they themselves have, you know, we're now funding a lot more students than we previously used to fund, and I'm just waiting for the acting CEO to give me the number.
So, in fact, the UNISA students are the ones that have signed most of their LAVSOPs. Like, for example, we paid $82 million in terms of LAVSOP, and our front payment was very low. So the schedule does include the detailed schedule. MP Bozzoli does include the UNISA students. The allocation in terms of DHEAD and NSF is $232 million. To date, we've paid $121 million. So with UNISA students, as they sign LAVSOP, we've moved faster compared to the other universities that are not signing LAVSOPs.
The question of the rejected students, we have a total number. I was just looking for that number in my files here. Maybe you can help me quickly. The total number of university and TVET students that were declined. Okay, whilst you're looking for that number, So we have a total number of 94,607 students that were declined. These students are students. You know, there were a lot of students, especially with this 100,000 sort of discussion, who don't qualify for NSFAS, who thought they qualified for NSFAS. So that hence the increase in the number of students that actually do not qualify based on the criteria that we use for student allocation. So, you know, that is the total number that was declined. The funds that are not reaching students, are these funds being misappropriated? You know, we ask for reconciliations from institutions to check by student who the money actually went to. So we do that process throughout the year because obviously it's quite important for us. We can't have a lot of, you know, unfunded students. So I think it's still a little bit early for us to determine whether, you know, the fraudulent students that we used to have, you know, has decreased and so on. But, you know, just anecdotally, just based on the fact that we do cross-verification with Home Affairs, with SASA, with DHET automatically, and we have direct integration with those databases. So we integrate with the Lurids file at DHET, DBE rather, with the, you know, SASA and Home Affairs and so on, and we communicate directly with students, which is why the signature of laptops is quite important. Means that we would hope and expect, actually, as a board, that there's been you can identify the student by name, by ID number that has been funded, whereas previously it was quite a difficult process, which was fraught with a lot of, you know, problems in terms of fraud and so on. So the data that we integrate with, as I said, I mean, we have a you know, integration with SASA, DBE rather, and Home Affairs, but also we integrate with the institutions. As I said, it's not all institutions that have automatic integration at the moment because of the level of competence in terms of their own IT systems. So that's where the capacity building of this, especially the rural-based institutions, is going to be quite important because that will eliminate a whole lot of fraud that we otherwise may have had in the system. And the Mpumalanga students, if I could just, I think there were accommodation issues in Mpumalanga, but there were also laptop signature issues in Mpumalanga. So perhaps the acting CEO or Mr. Jacobs, could you just comment on if you, their permission for Chair?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Chair. At Mpumalanga, there were two types of students that we had. Some of the students that, firstly, just as a background, there were students that we called the students that were registered qualifying for NSFAS, unfunded or underfunded. So that cohort, we found money to assist those students later in the year. As a result, the students could not sign their laptops on times when we generated. And because some of those students had not applied as well, we had to get supporting documentation of those students. And that led to the students who otherwise could have been funded when they were at the invest in December, because some of the money we got it by the 28th of November, so they couldn't sign. When they come back in January, we still had to address the 2016 issues with them, but those issues have been now addressed. Section.
And there's one question which I missed here from Honorable Bozoli, which is about the difference between 400 and 5,000 and what may have been communicated. So we are now have the audited numbers, because we're busy with the audit now for the year ended 31st of March 2017. So the total number of students that were funded last year is actually 407,559. That's the exact number. And I'm not sure exactly where the 470,000 came from. I suspect, but I'm not sure of this. It may include, remember last year, there were also historic DAC students that relate to 2013, 2014, and 2015, and there were about 60,000 of them. So it may include some of those students because there was an additional allocation, but it's not, you know, as I say, it's historic DAC. It's not students that were funded in the normal course.
I think, Chair, what has happened is that, yes, an allocation was made available to the co-chairs in January, but the actual funding and the signing of the loan agreement forms by historic debt happened after year-end audit. So the figures that are there are for academic year of 2015, as they stand, excluding additional funding and historic debt. And what Honorable Pozzoli would have had is a number of students funded at a point in time, but not audited. So the historic debt and additional funding will reflect on the 2016-17 audit. okay, the 42,440 students, that's a question from Honorable Siwela. So these, in that number, the majority are by far are new students. There are some students who may have not been funded by NSFAS last year. They are first NSFAS funded students, but they are senior students. In other words, what typically happens is that, you know, if a student maybe whose parents have passed away, or a student whose parents have lost a job, they were previously non-qualifying, but maybe they're doing second year or third year, so they're first in NSFAS, but they are old or senior students. So you have that category of students, so those have been included in that 42,440 number. And then the question on the delays in communications. Yes, of course, you know, things could have been better early this year, especially in January and February because of the delays. We did work, I mean, we had a series of meetings with institutions to try and one say to them who were experiencing delays and backlogs, and how can we work together. And where there were training issues, you know, deal with those. But also where we had system constraints on our side, you know, there was a lot of investment put in, especially February and March, to stabilize the system. So the board, that's why I was saying the board was meeting almost, the board ESCO was meeting almost on a weekly basis to make sure that we could make decisions on the spot to resolve the issues. And, you know, the system is now largely stable, but there were really, there was a time when, I mean, I was actually at NSFAS every single day, you know, making sure that, you know, things were happening as they should, because we had a crisis in the delays in communication that was wrong and so on. So, you know, and the board agreed that I would spend time there and just identify exactly what was going on. So so that's why, you know, yes, we still have some issues, but we have resolved a lot of the issues that we had at the beginning of the year. And the performance management issues, you know, we've started that process, you know, as I indicated, you know, we had a chief operating officer that we released, so there have been a number of people that have been released, so we're not really taking this lightly, because we understand the importance of the role of the work of NSFAS. So we can't have, you know, a culture of non-performance and people who just have a lexicidical kind of attitude and so on. So, I mean, we take a really dim view of, you know, non-performance. So the 442,440 students, I think we've dealt with those. And as far as the department, I guess the department can respond in terms of where they are, in terms of finding the additional 1.8 billion rand to fund those students. You know, the problems at Univen, I mean, I really ended up also stepping in and getting involved in trying to resolve the Univen issues, and including dealing with the SRCs, the political parties that were involved in dealing with the students. You know, the fact that the students ended up traveling to Cape Town, yes, was actually regrettable, but it did help to resolve a lot of the issues. And where we ended up with the Univen was well, we had. I even remember the number. There were more than 700,000 students yet who were waiting for the signature of loan agreement forms. So we worked with the Vice Chancellor, Professor Mbati, to resolve those. And the majority of them were resolved, but the students were adamant. And we resolved up to 96% of the applications of students there. But the SRCs were saying they won't go back to lectures until 100% of the students are funded. So that took a while, and it is really quite regrettable that 2 weeks was lost. 2 weeks of the academic year was lost at Univen. But, you know, we will make sure that going forward, we don't have the same kind of situation, you know, that we had there. And
And yes, the application process, the online application process, the Honorable Kekana, you know, I think we do need to find an easier way, and we're working on it, or finding an easier way, because whether it's 5% or it's 20%, to the extent that we still have manual applications, you know, those 20% could be 100% of the problems. So we have to try and resolve that issue. So the online application process is the way to go, but, you know, we have to find an easy way of how those that cannot access the internet, you know, can be helped. You know, the question of the Waterbeck College, again, I'm going to ask my colleagues to help me here, because how many students are yet to be finalized at Waterbeck College? I'm looking at my colleagues here. Do we have an answer here, or should we submit a written
reply? No, I think, sir, we can submit a written reply back to Parliament for that specific college. But for most of these colleges, we have made upfront payments. Like, in total, we have made 8.9 million to available to that college. Yes. And just to add over and above, just across all the colleges, as much as 13% has given us data, but at least 45 colleges have continued to pay allowances to their students. So they didn't stop because students were not signing on a schedule of particulars.
And Honorable Co-Chairs, as far as the Univen issues where they said the IT systems of NSFAS were to blame, Univen had been part of the pilot from 2014. So they're quite familiar with the student standard model. The only difference between the pilot which had been running for 2 years there at Univen and what happened this year as far as Univen was the introduction of the one-time PIN, which I guess confused students and the administration as well, because we generate the loan agreement form, then they have to activate that one-time PIN before you can get the allowance. And I think the integration with the university, as far as that is concerned, could have been done better. So it wasn't the IT system that NSFAS itself. It was because we changed, and we thought it wasn't a big change, but it turned out to be a problem. The fact that, but we're doing this with all the institutions that were on SBAN, that you now have to put an OTP to sign the loan agreement, which you thought was an easier, it is actually an easier way of confirming that the student has read the T's and C's and has agreed to the funding. So that was the issue, the major issue at Univen. The disabled students, we have a separate allocation for disabled students with disabilities. Now, what we have found as a board is that, you know, there are a number of cases where the allocations for students with disabilities are underutilized. In a lot of cases, it's because the institutions do not have disability units and policies, or if they do have some of them, we found a number of cases where the institutions have unallocated money or unutilized monies. So we're trying to build capacity now. So we have a team now that's working with institutions to build the capacity at the disability units of institutions so that they can utilize money. Because it is unfortunate, because the students, it's not as if there are no students with disabilities. And when you have money underutilized and it's returned or allocated to those institutions that are using the money, I mean, you're actually disadvantaging and robbing those students that should be receiving those disability allowances, especially given that the average funding for students with disabilities is quite high, because obviously we have to provide for assistive devices, assistive equipment and things like that, including interpreters for those that need interpreters and so on. So it is really sad when you end up with situations where the allocations are underutilized. And we've had, from year in, year out, we have institutions that continue to underutilize their disability funding. So we're building that capacity. We've had people now where we've refined our own disability policy to be able to build capacity at institutions. And the questions from Honorable Chair, in terms of, you know, now that we're saying the institutions would play some role, you know, at the moment, you know, most of the institutions still have their financial aid offices. They still have their student support services in their TVET colleges. And therefore, you know, this will help, especially because we work together. So we give them upfront allowances, we help them, we help the students, obviously, in the process. So at the moment, I mean, we expect them to do this as part and parcel of their work. In other words, it's not additional to their work. And in that case, I mean, it's far reduced. If you look at it, processing model applications actually doesn't require a lot of resources because we do the rest, as opposed to where they were in the past, where they were doing quite a lot compared to what they're doing now. The systems to verify data are much, much better. So the linkages with the likes of SASA, with DBE, with Home Affairs, you know, work much better now. So that's why, going back to the issue of fraud, we should be able to reduce fraud from compared to where we were in the past. And as far as the 42,440 students, they've gone through an evaluation process. So we're quite satisfied that these are deserving students, that they qualify, that there are other students that come from SASA households, quintile 1, 2, or 3, or if they are above those, there are students that come from households that earn, you know, up to 122,000. So we're quite satisfied with that process.
Thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of our business this evening. Let me take this opportunity to thank NSFAS for your presentation and the responses. And those responses that you might not have been able to give now, they can actually follow, especially those that might be involving statistics that are not going to be available. But in the main, you did adequately.